Lake Effect Weekend continues on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Mayan Silver. In 1840, there were less than 400 African Americans living in Madison. History has recorded that some arrived as slaves to fur trappers, and others came to work in the mines. In 1850, the Fugitive Slave Act caused many to escape to free states like Wisconsin. But that's not where the story ends.
Born and raised in Madison, Muriel Sims is an adjunct faculty member at Edgewood College, and she's author of Settlin', Stories of Madison's Early African-American Families. Sims' father came to Madison in 1927 to attend the pharmacology program at UW-Madison.
After a brief return to Missouri, the elder Sims came back to Madison to settle and build a family. Sims says that her family's story is just one of many. Her book is a collection of narratives told by those who lived and remember what Madison was like for African Americans in those early years.
In part one of this interview, contributor Jennifer Field spoke with Sims about where African Americans first lived and what those communities looked like.
As far as my research tells me, and as far as I know from my personal experience, the first black neighborhood was in the 600 block of Dayton Street. And that was where many African Americans first lived. Back then, the homes were very small, but you could get in maybe 7 to 8 houses within a half a block area. The church was the dividing line, and then Hill's Store, and around the corner on Blount Street was also an area where blacks lived. So that section, 600 block of Dayton Street, and around the corner on Blount Street, which would have been, I'm guessing now, about the 100 block of Blount Street.
Were we able to live anywhere in the city, or were we relegated to live in that area? Did we have freedom of choice to live anywhere and chose that area, or was it forced upon us?
I have to guess at this, only because so many black people lived in that area and did not live in other areas of the city. So I have to say that more than likely the realtors played a big part in assuring that black people, or assuring the wider community that black people would live in a certain area. The other areas were Williamson Street, Wilson Street, the Greenbush area, and over on Mound Street. Those were some other areas where blacks lived.
What's happening during that time period? Where are people working? What are they doing? What's happening in the community at that time?
Blacks had multiple jobs, and they owned multiple businesses. So they were working people, and we considered ourselves just that, working people. We did not consider ourselves a working class or a class of people. We all were at the same income level and practiced our faith on Sundays. So we thought about ourselves as a well-respected, well-connected community.
So Muriel, what would the houses have looked like at that time?
The houses on Dayton Street were small. Each area of the house was small. The bedrooms were small. The living rooms were small. Most of them were two-story structures. But like I said, you could get 7 or 8 houses in a half a block area. That's about how small they were. There was little space between each house. And that's pretty much the way it was. I think the Allisons had probably the biggest house. They had enough space to house not only their families, but the families of others who wanted to rent from them. That's the biggest house I remember. And I think that they had a beauty shop in the back as well.
So when we were talking earlier, we talked about how photographs played a big part in your creating these stories. Talk to me about where you got them and where they led you.
When I looked at the pictures, I decided that they seemed to form some categories. What I noticed through the text is that quite a few of our black men went into the military. The same with sports. We had several black men, black young men, who were outstanding in the sports area. I decided to feature them. And then I decided to feature those who volunteered their services while they were still raising their families and going to school and doing whatever they needed to do. They practiced this notion of volunteerism, forming the NAACP, forming many organizations, some of which I had never heard of before. People gave me, sent me photos. Many of them are from my collection or from other people's collection. Some are from the Wisconsin Historical Society. So I got them from wherever I could possibly get them. So families were very good to me about donating their pictures.
So when you're sitting, Muriel, and you're looking at these photographs, I'm imagining that it's both nostalgic for you and there's also some surprise. Am I even close to what was going on while you were looking at them?
Well, your first comment is on target. I like looking at pictures and I like looking at these images. I was surprised that we had an early African American who was a soapbox derby participant. And I think that might have been a surprise to some people. Who would have imagined that a black youngster would be interested in soapbox building?
And would be allowed to participate.
That's correct, allowed to participate, yes. I had forgotten that my brother-in-law was so interested in all of these sports. He was a hockey fan, he was a baseball fan, a football fan, and he also played in the band. And he was the only one. And he didn't care, apparently, that he was the only one.
Sometimes we do what we gotta do.
That's right. He liked these sports and he liked the band and he participated, yes.
One of the reasons you started doing this mural is because your mother's contemporaries were passing away. I don't want to say it's information too late, but were there were moments in those photographs that caused you to ask questions that there's a chance you might not have an answer to at this point?
For the photos that are really old, I wished I had known these folks. I wish I had met them and had a chance to talk with them. I remember the people who were my ancestors. I was in awe of them because they carried themselves so well. They were my role models in terms of how to behave. Yes, they were stern, but they meant it and they still cared about you. Yes, they told my parents on me that.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah, yes.
It's a story would beat you before you got home.
Yes, and they were very happy to do it. So I had many mothers and fathers, is the way I look at it.
Material Culture contributor Jennifer Fields curates the Radio Chipstone series. The project is funded by the Chipstone Foundation, a decorative arts foundation whose mission is preserving and interpreting their collection, as well as stimulating research and education in the decorative arts.
This week, Jennifer spoke with Muriel Sims, author of Settlin', Stories of Madison's Early African American Families. You can hear part two of the interview with Sims on the next edition of Radio Chipstone.